This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehish Mudeep, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
The International Criminal Court has convicted Congolese warlord Jean-Pierre Bemba and four others of witness tampering in a landmark verdict underscoring the importance of a free and fair justice system.
That's Lisa Bryant reporting from Paris. Details coming up.
Also, the third and final presidential debate between Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump will be held tonight in Las Vegas, Nevada. And the social media site Twitter is buzzing with jokes about the unusual and increasingly bizarre U.S. presidential election.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Democrats Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump meet in Las Vegas, Nevada today for their third and final presidential debate. Trump continues to trail Clinton in public opinion polls, and today's debate may be his final opportunity to change the trajectory of the race with less than 3 weeks to go until Election Day. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports from Washington.
The final debate looms is crucial for Donald Trump, who trails Hillary Clinton by an average of 6 percentage points in recent national polls. Trump continues to warn supporters they are fighting the Clinton political machine and a biased news media.
This is a rigged system, folks, but we're not going to let it happen.
Even some Republicans have rejected Trump's claim. Trump has also lashed out at allegations from numerous women who have accused him of making improper sexual advances in the past.
These are lies being pushed by the media and the Clinton campaign to try and keep their grip on our country. They are all false. They're totally invented fiction. All 100% totally and completely fabricated.
Clinton has been immersed in debate prep in recent days. Despite continuing controversy over her emails, she's tried to keep her campaign focused on the issues.
Number one, we've got to get the economy working for everyone, not just those at the top. And we can do this.
Clinton is getting help on the campaign trail from President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, who noted Trump's vulgar comments about women in a recently released videotape.
This was a powerful individual speaking freely and openly about sexually predatory behavior.
Trump has slipped in some polls in the wake of the salacious video and the allegations from several women, says analyst Tom DeFrank.
This is not the behavior that's going to endear him to college-educated white women. That's who he needs.
Trump and Clinton likely have different approaches to the final debate, says Republican strategist John Feary.
I think Hillary is going to play it safe because I think she believes she has the lead. I think Trump is going to go for broke because he believes that he's got to make ground and really kind of attack her.
In the final weeks of the campaign, both candidates will focus on a handful of so-called swing states where the election outcome will be decided. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. presidential campaigns are often rough-and-tumble affairs, but many believe this year's battle between Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton has reached a new level of rancor in modern-day politics. Through much of the 2016 campaign, attention has focused on comments made by Trump about women, sex, race, and rigged elections. One organization that's keeping a close watch on the political discourse is the Southern Poverty Law Center, which has been battling hate and discrimination in the United States for 45 years. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
Here in the United States, two topics known to trigger heated debate, an argument or even a fistfight, are politics and religion. Throughout the campaign, but especially of late, attention is focused on remarks made by Donald Trump. Critics have called them racist and misogynistic. He and his supporters deny the charges and accuse the media of misconstruing what he said. Mark Potok with the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project describes the current political climate as astounding, and he says Trump is the reason.
Donald Trump has created a situation in which white supremacist and allied groups are absolutely thrilled. They feel that they have the best candidate they've seen going back at least to 1968 when George Wallace ran as a segregationist for president of the United States.
Wallace served four terms as governor of Alabama. He ran for president as the American Independent Party candidate and lost. Potok says the same extreme groups that supported Wallace also are backing Trump.
Donald Trump has, in effect, taken the lid off of Pandora's box and allowed a political space, helped to create a political space where these kinds of things, the idea that America is a white man's country and so on, are aired, have entered the political mainstream.
Pandora's box comes from Greek mythology. It was said to contain the evils of the world before Pandora released them. Some have called Trump's comments about Mexicans and Muslims hate speech, but Potok says it's a term that can be hard to define.
The phrase hate speech doesn't really have any legal meaning in the United States. You know, hate speech that you say and I don't like. That said, it is absolutely true that Trump has put forward and pushed memes and ideas and attacks that come straight from the extreme right in this country.
The Southern Poverty Law Center fellow gives an example of allegations long made by certain groups about international bankers conspiring against U.S. citizens.
While Trump did not make it clear that he was talking about a Jewish conspiracy, that's the very language that neo-Nazis and similar people have used for years. International bankers are conspiring to do us in.
But Potok says Trump is appealing to many Americans who believe they've been marginalized and think they have legitimate grievances. They say they like Trump because he rejects political correctness and tells it like it is.
I think the supporters of Donald Trump, by and large, are angry, older, working-class white people. These are people who feel that the elites are doing them in, that the elites are profiting at their expense, and at the same time, they feel that certain underclasses of people, Latino immigrants, Muslim immigrants, and so on, are somehow stealing from the American people as well. They're parasitic.
Potok says these feelings are not limited to the United States. He says they were evident in the UK before the Brexit vote, when Britons chose to leave the European Union. In 2016, a political candidate's remarks can be spread far and fast thanks to modern-day media, especially the digital media. Opinions on presidential politics have been widely aired over the Internet, Twitter, text messages, and more. Potok says they've had a big impact on the U.S. presidential campaign and political discourse.
Voices that were formerly marginalized, the Klan, say, or neo-Nazi groups and so on, are able to get their messages into the political mainstream by essentially going around the traditional media. So the result we see is that Donald Trump begins to retweet information, quote-unquote, that is coming from neo-Nazis, from conspiracy theorists, and so on.
Potok says he has not heard similar rhetoric from the Clinton campaign. He says there has been a steady rise in hate groups in the U.S. since 2008, when Barack Obama won the presidential election. He believes their growth will continue, no matter what the outcome of the November 8th election. Potok says there's a congressional candidate in the southern U.S. state of Tennessee who's taken Donald Trump's slogan, "Make America Great Again," and changed it to, "Make America White Again." Trump has disavowed any support from Ku Klux Klan leader and U.S. senatorial candidate David Duke, but critics say it took him a long time to do so, after first saying he did not even know who David Duke was. In March, on the ABC program Good Morning America, Trump said that there's nobody that's done so much for equality as he has. When asked if he would make a clear and unequivocal statement renouncing the support of all white supremacists, he said, "Of course." Potok says it's a worrying time in the U.S., and he fears political-related violence is extremely possible after the presidential election. Trump accuses the media of often misconstruing his statements, including their coverage of allegations that he has groped women.
The election is being rigged by corrupt media pushing false allegations and outright lies in an effort to elect Hillary Clinton president. But we are going to stop it. We are not going to back down.
During the vice presidential debate, Republican Mike Pence defended Trump against allegations that he has called Mexicans rapists and some women slobs, and said President Obama was not a U.S. citizen.
He still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables.
Pence denies that his running mate is racist. Meanwhile, in a recent interview on CNN, Melania Trump defended her husband, saying he is kind, a gentleman, and someone who supports women. Many observers agree that neither candidate has always told the truth, but Clinton has not been accused of comments that are racist or sexist. She has come under fire for her handling of her private emails while she was Secretary of State. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Joe. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and at 15 past the hour, here's a recap of our top story. The third and final presidential debate between Democratic Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump will resume today in Las Vegas, Nevada. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The streets of Kinshasa were quiet today after the opposition called for a general strike. The main opposition coalition in the DRC is protesting a deal signed earlier this week between President Joseph Kabila and a smaller opposition platform that would postpone elections by nearly 2 years and leave Kabila in office in the interim. For VOA, William Klaus reports from Kinshasa.
On Wednesday, Kinshasa experienced a so-called Dead City Day for the third time this year. It is similar to a general strike and designed to show the population's discontent with the government. Children are supposed to stay away from school and adults from work. The main opposition coalition, the Rassemblement, called the strike to demand that President Joseph Kabila step down in December at the end of his second and under the constitution final term.
La ville morte, moi je le soutiens. C'est une ville morte pour nous.
Near the central market, a young man called Kabir Ndai says Kinshasa supports the strike because it is for them. It is because the people are unhappy with the leaders of the country. Observing the strike is a sacrifice, Ndai admits, but a patriotic sacrifice. Kinshasa's normally chaotic early morning streets were quiet and nearly empty. Shops were sealed off with steel doors and public buses operated a reduced service, carrying only a few passengers. But towards midday, VOA saw many market traders, money changers and mobile credit vendors working, and some shops were opening as well. Kinshasa is a city of more than 10 million people, the vast majority poor and only a fraction with salaried employment. Taking a day off work, therefore, could mean a day without food, or for the fortunate few with salaries, risk punishment. Several state employees said they had been instructed to work during the strike, but would not provide any further detail.
Le ville morte d'aujourd'hui est... Nous, on n'est pas satisfait que chez nous...
At work crafting baskets, carpenter Herman Abanda says the strike is a bad idea. He says for the little people in Congo, everyday life means going out and looking for something to eat. He said the country's politicians should sort out this crisis among themselves so that the little people do not suffer. Last month, street demonstrations resulted in dozens of deaths as security forces and protesters clashed. There had been fears similar problems might arise on Wednesday. In the Limite neighbourhood, an opposition stronghold, police used tear gas to disperse a group of opposition-supporting young men. But calm soon returned, and the strike appears to have remained free of violence in the capital. Kabila's ruling coalition had called on the people of Kinshasa to ignore the strike, warning them a day without work is a day lost for the electoral process. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
¶¶
The International Criminal Court has convicted Congolese warlord Jean-Pierre Bemba and four others of witness tampering in a landmark verdict underscoring the importance of a free and fair justice system. For VOA, Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
Mr. Jean-Pierre Bemba Gombo, the chamber finds you guilty under Article 70,
this is the second trial for Jean-Pierre Bemba at the International Criminal Court. The former vice president of the Democratic Republic of Congo is serving an 18-year sentence for war crimes and crimes against humanity related to widespread abuses by his forces in Central African Republic. This latest verdict finds Bemba and four members of his legal team guilty of bribing and otherwise influencing 14 defense witnesses to influence the outcome of his first trial. They faced up to 5 years in prison. This is the ICC's first case dealing with witness tampering, and it will likely not be its last. Presiding Judge Bertram Schmidt described the actions of the accused as clear and downright criminal behavior.
Today's judgment sends the clear message that the court is not willing to allow its proceedings to be hampered or destroyed. It sends the message that those who try to distort and interfere with the administration of justice of this court do not go unpunished.
Similar allegations have cropped up in other ICC cases, particularly those dealing with post-election violence in Kenya. Cases against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and Deputy President William Ruto, who both face crimes against humanities charges, were ultimately dropped for insufficient evidence. The prosecution cited allegations of witness tampering, bribery, and threats. Reacting to Wednesday's verdict, Human Rights Watch noted the ICC has issued arrest warrants for three people on charges of witness tampering in relation to the Kenya cases. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The secretary of the ZANU-PF Youth League reportedly has called for the seizure of remaining white-owned farmlands in Zimbabwe. Kodzani Chapanga called for the takeover at a recent youth rally. Also present at the rally in the city of Norton was Vice President Felikazala Mpoko. The Daily News in Harare reports that the league has been parceling out state land to ZANU-PF youth through the Ministry of Local Government. Earlier in the year, the central bank warned against continued land seizures.
Somalia hopes to elect a president as well as members of two houses of parliament by the end of November, but it is not your traditional one-person, one-vote process, and experts warn it may get messy. From Nairobi, VOA's East Africa correspondent Jill Craig explains.
America's presidential elections may be taking up most of the world's attention right now, but Somalia's electoral season is also underway. Somali Parliament member Abdi Welly Kanyare says overall the election process is going smoothly.
So far we are not seeing much complaint. But anyway, wherever election happens, always there's people that will complain and people that will say it's not fair, even in the first one. So legitimacy at the moment is fine.
Michael Keating is the special representative of the UN Secretary General for Somalia. He says there are challenges in conducting these elections, like security threats, since Somalia is still attempting to recover from 3 decades of war and lawlessness, while still battling threats from al-Shabaab. Also, there is the absence of a national ID system and a lack of institutional capacity and memory.
I'm cautiously optimistic that this is going to go well, even though it's going to be very messy, and even though, as somebody said to me, it is possibly the most complicated electoral process on planet Earth in all time.
There will be a new federal parliament consisting of an upper house and lower house. State assemblies will elect the 54 members of the upper house. The lower house will consist of 275 members, voted upon by 14,025 delegates selected by 135 clan elders. Voting for upper house candidates has begun, while polls for the lower house are scheduled to start Sunday, October 23rd. Both houses will then elect Somalia's president on November 30th. But not everyone, including Abdi Samatar, a Somali-born economic geographer at the University of Minnesota, is pleased with the arrangement.
This is not an election, Jill. It's a selection.
a group of people are going to pick up candidates for parliament. Ordinary citizens have no way of influencing that in any sense of the word. So it's really a charade of a selection, of an election, I should say.
The United Nations, African Union, United States, and European Union issued a joint statement October 16th, expressing concern that individuals with a history of criminality, violence, and terrorism are being presented as candidates for the upper house of parliament, saying it represents a regressive step. But MP Kanyare argues that if someone has not been found guilty of doing something illegitimate, they have the right to run for office.
Because according to our constitution, it says that someone can be elected if he has not been convicted in the court the last 5 years. So I believe they are within the framework of the legality.
Keating of the UN says that rejecting candidates who have been implicated in rights abuses would reaffirm Somalia's commitment to ending the culture of impunity.
But if we get through this and the result is legitimate and it is not marked by excessive violence, then it's a huge confidence boost for Somalis. And it's going to really set the stage for Somalia to go to another level.
With many hoping that next level includes nationwide one-person, one-vote elections by 2020. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari told the 21 Chibok girls rescued this week that he will redouble efforts to find those still missing 2 years after their kidnapping. Nearly 300 girls were taken from their school in 2014 in Chibok in northeastern Borno State, where Boko Haram has waged a seven-year insurgency aimed at creating an Islamic State, killing thousands and displacing more than 2 million people. Last week, the rebels released 21 girls in the first negotiated release brokered by the International Red Cross and the Swiss government. Boko Haram controlled a large portion of Nigeria at the start of 2015, but Nigeria's army, aided by troops from neighboring countries, has recaptured most of that territory.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look at the role of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office of African Affairs. We'll discuss the impact of the office as it seeks to improve the quality of life for the District of Columbia's diverse African-born population. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.